hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 161 of Destroy All Culture. However these trivialities demean me, I must away and tend my ravens.
This is the way.
This is the way. Yeah, let's never merge Good Place and Mandalorian again. Anyway, I'm Adam P. Nave. With me as always is Aiden Morgan. I forgot that whole part for a minute.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, people would not know who we were
if you did not say all those new listeners that we get every week.
That's right. And Frank.
Well, Frank knows who we are.
Yes, indeed.
Anyway, yeah, so actually, let's flip this a little bit, because you went and saw The Irishman?
The Irishman.
And I'm very curious.
Well, it's 3.5 hours of Scorsese goodness. it is long, but I mean, the thing about a good Scorsese movie is that, I mean, he knows enough about, I think he's still using Thelma Schoonmaker as his editor. They know enough about pacing that they can take something long and make it.
Sure.
It doesn't feel like you're sitting there for 3.5 hours.
Right, right.
My friend said, I'm going to tempt fate and get a large drink, and he did. And, of course, he had to get up twice. But
right.
I'm no fool. I dehydrated myself for 24 hours beforehand. So I was a leathery husk, but I enjoyed myself.
Are you going to go see a long movie or get a blood test? Who can say?
One of the two. No, it's... It is. I mean, I made a joke on Twitter that, you know, I said I went and saw it, and every time De Niro showed up on screen, I poked people and said, "That's cinema."
Nice.
But indeed, it does feel like cinema, in the way that Martin Scorsese is framing the terms.
Sure.
And it's, I don't know, what can I say? It's, on the one end, it's kind of classic. When people think of Scorsese, I mean, they don't think of Kundun or Alice Doesn't Live Here anymore. They think of things like Goodfellas and Casino, and that's what this is. This is Scorsese diving into the lives of mob men and, you know, groups.
His sweet spot, his popular sweet spot, at the very
least. Popular sweet spot, very, very much. I mean, this is a world of, like, men, white men, being violent to each other and vying for power, you know, and if you go in there and come out and say there weren't any black people, then it's obviously
it's a valid point, but
it's a valid point, but that's this is not the movie for you. I mean,
right? Scorsese is going to do what he does, and right or wrong, that's what you're going to get.
Precisely, and. Given that, though, it is a whiz-banger of a movie. It's certainly some of the best stuff I've seen from him in years. I know a lot of people liked Wolf of Wall Street. I kind of had mixed feelings on it. It was a fun movie, but I wasn't sure that it... I don't know. I think it did so much to... I think it basically made the main character come off kind of good, even though it wasn't supposed to. Mm-hmm. But this one is a real sort of reckoning, I think, with the lives of these figures.
Nice.
We've got Frank Sheeran, a teamster and basic mob hitman, basically, played by Robert De Niro. We've got, I think, Russell Bufalino, a high up in the mafia, played by Joe Pesci, who's coming out of retirement.
Of course.
This role. And of course, Al Pacino as Jimmy Hoffa, which is... On the one hand, it's perfect, but on the other hand, it's really weird.
And on the third hand, it's better than Travolta.
You make a good point.
Just tossing out there. Also, just because this has been in my head since you started talking about this, would you say that the new, like, you know, kind of greeting or rather parting phrase for people who work in film and don't want to make a good film would be like, stay Scorsese? Would that be a thing?
Take it, Scorsese. I think that should be a thing.
Okay.
I think that would be.
I don't know why. I think it was just Good Place. Just stuck that in my head somehow.
I desperately wish that were a thing, but I mean, we could try and make it work.
Yeah.
But people would say, "Are you saying that Martin Scorsese is sleazy?" And I'm like, "No, but." And then we'd have to reference
Good Place. Right.
Yeah,
it would.
Yeah, it'd be too much. Too much work.
It would be. Anyway.
Yeah, so it essentially it follows the life of Sheeran from just sort of from the Second World War up until not quite the present day, but up until him as a very very old man, and to achieve this time bending opus, Scorsese makes a lot of use of computerized de-aging technologies,
right?
And the results are, by and large, it's really good. I know some people have complained about it, and in the first scene when you see them go from being old men to like men in like early middle age,
right?
It takes a few minutes for your brain to sort of recalibrate. But it's not.
Now, is that just like a hard cut, or do we get to watch like a creepy kind of like CGI like watch them just de-age in real time as the background shifts?
Yeah, no, it's a hard cut, and it's actually done.
Okay.
The way Scorsese does it is really intriguing, and I remember I was watching it, and I thought, I wonder if he's going to cut to a de-aged De Niro, because he's parked at the side of the road, and he and Pesci, and he's looking at this Texaco station, and Pesci says, "Hey, remember that place?" And it's of course the place where these two characters first met. And De Niro's looking out the window, and cars are going by, but it's kind of like, sort of like rippling his face like a few times.
Okay.
And it's not done in a way to say, ooh, it's this naturalistic detail that sort of signifies on a subconscious level that you were going to see something different. I thought it was a very sort of
nice,
interesting way to do like at one point you'd get like the screen would ripple and you get like a harp going doo-loo-loo-loo. But now this is what you get. You get like a very interesting Scorsese-esque sort of version of this.
Right.
And then it cuts to a younger De Niro. But they don't make them look like themselves as younger people. They sort of take their faces now and they just sort of de-age the faces that they've got rather than invent the faces they used to have.
Okay.
So here's the weird thing about it all, though. Everybody de-aged to look young in the movie kind of looks prematurely old, because you're seeing like the structures of their faces as they are now rather than they were, these actors were back then. So
right.
So there's this weird elegiac sense, like these people are almost, they're always old. Like they're always kind of like burdened down with like the things that they do, and so it's an interesting effect, and the movie is really it's not just that a lot of people get killed in the movie because it's a mob Scorsese mob movie, so they
right.
do, but every time like you meet a new character like who's a historical figure, the movie pauses for a second and the text comes up to tell you how they died, so you get so and so shot outside a restaurant 9 times in the head 1979, and so on and so forth. Almost everybody in this movie dies from 79 to 80. I think it's, they don't say it outright, but it must have been like a particular like mob gang war at that point, in which a lot of old accounts get settled to. It's an interesting experience. I think that Scorsese is kind of reckoning with, you know, himself being now an old man, is kind of reckoning
right.
a little bit with time and death, and I think with his own legacy as, you know, as a maker of mob movies, because the movie kind of peters out in the end, because it's being told by De Niro's character as an old man in a nursing home, and it kind of ends with him in the nursing home just going through his day, like, you know, the taking pills, trying to, like, you know, get up and do things, visiting
sure,
the priest,
sure.
And it's just, and the FBI come by and try and get him to talk about De Hoffa's death, because of course this is the thing that this movie answers, whether you believe it or not. And he still won't talk. And they're like, he's like, talk to my attorney. He's like, your attorney's dead. And there's this pause. And De Niro's like, who got him? And they just paused. Cancer.
Nice.
Everybody's dead. Yeah, and there's the other thing I found fascinating is Anna Paquin is in the movie as his oldest daughter, who's sort of the moral center. She's the one person who sees her father for who he is, which is as a monster, essentially. And she becomes kind of this patriarchal daughter prize between Buffalino, Sheeran, and Jimmy Hoffa. And she doesn't like Buffalino. She fears her father, but she loves Jimmy. And of course, and she's the one who kind of understands. Oh, these are spoilers, by the way, people. She's the one who figures out right off the get-go that it's probably her dad who killed Hoffa.
Gotcha.
Even though they were great friends and had been for years. And the question becomes, it's not just which of these three men is capable of, like, winning her affection, you know, and her friendship, but who is worth, like, who deserves it, like, right. Who is worth, you know, the daughter's love, and that's the real crux of the movie, like, who deserves love and who deserves forgiveness, and the answer is probably isn't. The answer is complicated because on the one hand, it's like it sure as shit is not Sheeran or Buffalino, these sort of violent mob men. But on the other hand, it's sort of like saying, well, these Scorsese is also saying, well, on this earth, people do what they do. And the question of whether you deserve good or bad things is kind of arbitrary. And is there some judgment awaiting you afterwards? You don't know. It's just...
Gotcha.
You know, so it's a deeply sort of ambiguous movie on that count. And also the dialogue's great. So it's great mob dialogue where everything is settled, but nobody can be specific.
Right.
So everything important has to be sort of like danced around and so on. And so it's good stuff. Anyway, so yeah, I'll say it's one of my picks of the week, The Irishman.
Fair enough.
Coming to Netflix.
Your other, I know, pick of the week has to be the third episode of Mandalorian, and of course we're going to talk a bunch of spoilers. But I know that you loved it, right?
The hopping Mandalorians.
Yeah.
I won't say that I just disliked it outright, although there were parts that I did. I'll start off with saying what I did like. It actually gave some stakes to the show.
Yeah.
Because suddenly, instead of like him just carting a kid around and having little adventures, suddenly he has to make a choice, and you know it's coming, right? And you know what the choice is going to be, but it's at least that is happening, so well, it's not just one thing after another.
Okay, I mean, like I said, like there's one bit I really didn't like, and past that though, I really did like what the episode did in terms of giving the character a character finally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you know you see him when he first goes with his bounty, and the other Mandalorians are all like, "Ugh, we don't take this shit." And he's like, "You know, we do, and also make sure there's some for the foundlings, so we know he was a foundling, and he's still kind of giving back." And you get a sense of the community he's part of, even when it disagrees with him. And then, of course, at the end, they come riding in because he is part of that community, kind of proved that he still does value it.
Yes.
Even if not in necessarily the same way they do. And I really did like that sort of build out for it. It finally tells us a lot about the character in a larger sense, not, you know, just like, well, he took this kid. And we get it because he was one.
Sort of thing. Yeah, no. I mean, those are things that I like as well about the episode. I think it did some necessary character work.
You know, it felt more Star Warsy to me somehow, even though it wasn't doing anything different. I don't know what made the change. Something in the directing. The bit that I really didn't like, of course, is just one shot. And it's just that fucking salute at the end.
Yeah, that kind of put a button on things that did not really need to. Yeah.
That was like, the fuck did we just do?
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of broke. That was the straw that kind of broke the camel's back for me on that episode.
But so, what didn't you like about it? Because I am curious.
A few things. I guess the whole, I guess when the Mandalorians showed up to help them out, and I just thought, ooh, it's the hopping Mandalorians. As soon as I said to myself the hopping Mandalorians, I could not take it seriously because they were just
That's
leaping
fair.
Around on their jetpacks.
Well, they were little jetpacks, right? You know.
And then there was just in time for Christmas, it's a heavy action gunner Mandalorian, and it was that thing where I got thrown out of the action, and then I couldn't really get back in, and then
I get
everything
that.
Around it just. And you know, when they were saying, "Do you ever take off your have you ever taken off your helmet?" He's like, "No." I'm like, "Well, then how do you eat? How the fuck do you people?"
They meant
eat?
Where anyone else could see it.
I know, but it was just like, ah, damn it!
I get that. Like, there are things that are perfectly good, but you're in the wrong headspace, and you take one bit wrong, and it cascades, and then you're just laughing at the whole thing, even though it is actually a good bit. And it just doesn't matter. I hope eventually, if you decide to rewatch it, you'll be able to push that aside. Because I actually think it is the best episode of the series. Like, it really built out the world. It did, as you say, give stakes. It made everything feel like, you know, making it all feel connected sounds crappy. You know, it's one of those terms. But it did make me feel like, okay, they're not just a bunch of disconnected scenes.
Fair enough. Yep.
No, you know, I mean, like, things from the first episode, everything, like, it builds... I also think it did a weirdly important thing is that, you know, Boba Fett was a complete fuck up, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so they're trying to sell us as like the Mandalorians is real, like he has this great reputation and everyone's like, oh, you're a Mandalorian. It's like, sure, but what does that mean? Like, it's suddenly like saying like, here's this badass stormtrooper and everyone's taking them seriously, which doesn't sell given what we've seen. So I think having a bunch of the Mandalorians come down and just be like, well, fuck this place, kind of really helps sell that they are a thing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
One thing that's been striking me for three episodes, and it really just came home this time, was the use of people calling him Mando.
Mando, yes.
Because when we saw, what's his fuck? You know, it is, I have said, or whatever the fuck he said.
Oh, I have spoken. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nick Nolte's character. Yeah. Like, he would call him Mando, and you're just like, okay, he's just being dismissive, he doesn't have a name. But then, like, everyone keeps doing it, and it not that it finally triggered it in my head, but it kind of cemented it in my head, this feeling that they've been saying it as a slur.
It is kind of. I think it's kind of like a nickname and a slur all at the
same
time. Well,
it's Gypsy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's you know, exactly like, right. it's an accepted slur that people don't necessarily consciously think of as a slur anymore, but that definitely is meant that way, whether they know it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. Well, I mean, and also it's easy, I think, because of course, Mandalorians wear helmets, and they,
right.
I think part of, it's pretty clear that, like, that scene, the This Is The Way scene, means like they're kind of subsuming their individual identities into this sort of like
they get signets and they all have names, like that's the thing, it's like, you know, they're all credited with actual names. So it is one of those, like, it plays into all those weird, well, not weird, but all those terrible races, like, well, they all look alike, right? Like, they all just wear their helmets, they all look alike, they're all just Mando, doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And it's that thing of, like, I know that it's Star Wars. They will probably never outright deal with it.
Probably not.
But given that Star Wars has a history, thanks to the prequels, of doing terrible racist takes on things, it is interesting to see one that is approaching thoughtful. You know, like, they're not going to deal with it head on. There's never going to be, like, here's the big episode about racism in Star Wars. This is not going to happen. But, again, they'll leave you the signpost so you can have the discussion. And I thought that is something that needed to happen. Just because, right? If they're going to set it up, they should at least leave the space for it to breathe so it can be kind of uncomfortable after a while. And then you have to stop and look at why.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I say. It's like, I actually am starting to warm up to the show now.
Cool.
I mean, I'm still not like, hooray! But
I mean, I'm gonna, I'm not, I mean, one episode that basically didn't impress me. And I think there are still other there I think my problem is that the show, this episode did some, like what you're saying, it did all these things, and all these things were necessary to turn it into like a better show, but it made a series of decisions that I just didn't agree with, and I've just, and they're all sort of,
well, I mean, it kind of crammed all of this into one episode instead of spreading this out better, frankly.
Yeah. And I'll just, for example, I remember there's one scene which, had I been sitting in the editing bay, I would have done it very differently. It's the scene where the Mandalorian, Mando, the freaking Mando, shows up to exchange, you know, the kid for the Beskar steel, and he's in conversation with Herzog's client, and then he says, "What is, you know, what are you going to do with the kid?" And you know that he's, and you know that this is the moment, right, when he's
right,
when he asks that question. You know he's made the decision, like you.
Yeah.
Or even if he's not going to say it out loud, you know what's going to happen. That, because that is the out of character, and literally a dangerous thing to say,
right,
to the client. And Herzog's response is like immediate, like they didn't give that any room to breathe because they're too busy just throwing this stuff on the screen. And I was like, "Ah, you missed your own character moment there, people," and just things like that.
I mean, look, this is not a show that will ever have like a life in the day type episode, right?
No.
Where we're gonna just change everything. We're gonna do this whole big character block. We're just gonna like commit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like one of those like epic, like, you know, it's never gonna have a Halt and Catch Fire episode. You know what I mean? Just like it's never gonna stop and just be like, hey. But I think they're at least trying. Like, I feel like they're trying now. Whatchamacallit? And of course, I you know, walking into it, I was like, I might be done with the show. I'll probably still watch it, but I'll just mentally be done, and it'll just be background noise. And then I was like, oh, I'm happily surprised. And I did it as a double feature with the latest episode of Titans.
Oh,
so I was kind of concerned, because again, Titans is like the worst show that I happily watch that, again, I would never recommend anyone else.
That's my feeling as well.
And wow, did this episode prove that true.
Oh my. Do tell.
It was just, they just spent so, they burned so much time for no good reason. They were just, like, there were a bunch of scenes that felt like, well, we need to have an action scene or two in this episode.
Mm.
But they were completely unnecessary.
Hmm.
Past like one, there was like one or two that like were okay, but they just kept happening, and they, none of them felt like they were worth the time they were giving them.
Hmm.
Like, you could shorthand a lot of this, and dear Lord, you needed to. one thing I did think was interesting was we get to see who builds costumes for, I guess, Batman and Bruce and Dick, which kind of made no sense to me, because like in the comics, right, it's always been, you know, like Lucius Fox, or just, you know, Batman himself with Alfred or whatever. And of course, in the comics, there, like, there are various costume makers who make costumes for usually supervillains.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, Dick goes to this guy and he's like, I need a costume. And the guy, like, and this was actually my favorite scene, because the guy was just pissed. Because he was like, oh, really? Because what'd you do to the last one? Like, you set it on fire. Like, and just keeps giving him shit. And like, he's offering him like some fruitcake and going on about how like fruitcake is his passion. He doesn't make costumes, doesn't know what to talk about. He's like, have a fucking slice of fruitcake. And Dick's like, what? He's like, oh wait, I'm sorry, you want? And like, takes out like this little like kitchen torch and lights it on fire. He's like, oh, you like it now, right? Like, just keeps giving him shit about setting that Robin costume on fire. And I kind of loved it, because I'm always here for people calling Dick Grayson on his shit.
Yep, like that too. That's,
and then we
good.
Get the, like, we've built you this new costume, because of course they did, and it has like all this stuff, and like you'll be able to move easier, so less armored, but like armored, but in a different way. And we don't actually see the Nightwing outfit, but that'll be the next episode, and like the finale of the season.
Hmm.
And again, it just feels like they're dragging some shit out.
Yeah,
there's one or two character bits in it that are really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That make the episode worth watching. But again, like the Gar bits are just unnecessary, bloody. It just the show, the first part of the season worked so well for me. You know, it felt like the Titans, and this feels like season one all over again.
It does, kind of, yeah.
Damn. And it's making me sad.
Well, hopefully they'll be able to pull something out for the finale.
I mean, there's already season three, and fuck it, I'll keep watching. Like that, I still like their Dick Grayson too much. I can't help it.
I know what you mean. I'm gonna watch it as well. Even though every week I'm gonna be like, okay, just don't be too fucking annoying this time.
Right.
And then like, I'm like, God,
for
damn
me,
it
always is like they hit that level where I'm like, just shut the fuck up.
Yep.
And then they have like a really cool like Dick Grayson bit, and I'm like, all right, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or recently, of course, a really good like Connor bit.
Yes.
Which there isn't one in this episode. But I'm just saying in general. Those have been delightful as well.
Surprisingly, they do a good job with Superboy. But anyway, I'll watch me some Titans. Have we discussed the latest episode of Batwoman? By the way, I've a feeling we have, because we did.
Yes, we did.
We did. Okay, yeah. Still enjoying it more than I thought. That one was very. I'm watching Ruby Rose cry at the end. That was very, very sad. Anywho,
no, they're still killing it. And like I said, I have heard as if you're not the one who told me this. I'm like talking about you, so forgive me. But I have heard that you've caught up on Arrow, which I still say is like the best CW thing this season, which I never thought I would say.
I know, me too. I think I'm. Actually, I thought the episode 4 was really, really good. This one, when they said, we're going back to Russia, and I thought to myself, all right, whatever.
Right.
But it turns out that putting Catherine McNamara and Stephen Amell together as, you know, Oliver and Mia is fucking dynamite. It is,
yes,
like, the best thing the show has ever done. I'm like, what? Because I've always found the Star City 2040 stuff to be pretty boring, frankly.
Really? See, I always really liked it, and it's mostly because, like, the kids, you know, because that's what we're just calling them. I just felt like they just had a spark, and it really was led by Catherine McNamara, and just the setting was kind of, we get it.
Yeah.
But the characters felt not only like, you know, look, it's like Team Arrow's rebuilding itself, and there were echoes and all that. But they felt not quite as grim, like they hadn't been broken by it yet.
Mm-hmm.
The way a lot of the Arrow characters are kind of ground down by it, which is interesting. You know, it's part of why I like the last couple seasons. But it is a refreshing thing to see them kind of like, no, we're good.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, I enjoy the character. I like Mia, William, and the rest of them. The future. Like the flash forwards,
right?
Like I thought it was always better in theory than it actually played out for me. I was always like, okay, I should be enjoying this more, but my attention would just kind of stray when it got there.
But
I find, but putting them all together, and giving, I think in giving Oliver, like turning like all sort of the ideas about like parentage and responsibility and giving them flesh like in like with Mia and William is just brilliant. I just like it.
I also just love the echoes back to early Arrow in a fresh way.
Exactly.
You know, the whole tennis ball thing and
yes.
And like the train bit and the ring the bell bit, which again, like the last time we were in Russia with not the flashbacks, but like I think it actually might have been a flashback. But like the whole ring the bell thing when he was doing training with the team before and all that, and seeing her like almost get there, but now there's like a new element of time, and it just makes it fascinating to see. Like, okay, she's already this good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, and I sort of have a new sort of appreciation for Catherine McNamara as well. I think she's really good in this role, and just
it makes me even sadder that Wayward Sisters didn't happen.
Yeah, no joke. That is a shame.
And I get why, because, like, and I do understand why, like, as much as, you know, I know that, like, CW is actually preparing to launch some sort of, like, female-led Ghost Hunter show.
Oh.
And everyone's like, but you had one. Like, you just didn't do it. And that's a shame, but I also understand exactly why. Like, as much as I love those characters, how do you reset Supernatural
Yeah, that's...
Because, like, when you have, like, the Winchesters fighting God, and then, what, here's a new show, the people who are, like, just having trouble fighting demons again, it's like, okay, but we know we're in for the years of the exact same ramp-up, and they can't do the same thing, and we've already worked our way up to God, like, what do we even have them do?
That's
and it feels like the spinoff is just a dead end.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which is, again, sad, because I think those characters are great.
Yeah, I know.
And if they had done the spinoff 5 years ago...
That would have made more sense.
Then they could have had a crossover for the last Supernatural season, right? But...
And it would have been better than that other failed spinoff that they tried to...
God damn it, yes.
That sort
that
of
terrible,
Chicago
terrible
city.
Chicago vampire thing.
Yeah, that was not so good.
That was a steaming load. That was some bad TV.
Oh, well, they
tried. But yeah. But no, Catherine McNamara, I think if they do go forward with the, what is it called, Green Arrow and the Canaries show?
Yeah, something like that.
Apparently that will be set in the future.
Oh. Okay, so they are going to go back to their own time.
And you have dropped
off. That makes sense.
So let's see if you come
back.
I'll
watch that.
Oh, there you are. Nope. Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, apparently Stargirl will be airing on the CW as well.
Maybe.
I hear you now.
Okay.
Okay, good. Sorry, we were talking about...
Yeah,
we were
just
wrapping up CW stuff.
So anyway, yeah, if the Green Arrow and Black Canaries thing and the Canaries spin-off happens, but apparently it is set in the future, so I guess they're going back there. And there's supposed to be a backdoor pilot, which is like the next to last episode of Arrow.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So like right after Crisis, we'll have that. So I'm guessing that something happens there.
Seven, and there's only eight episodes in the season. Am I right about that?
Right. There's one more this week. And then this weekend, the crossover starts.
Right. I'm kind of excited. I'm legitimately excited.
Yeah, let me hold on 1 second. Let me see. Because it's... where is this? What am I looking for? It is... Yeah, there's one this week. No, I don't think it's eight. It can't be just eight. I think it's 10.
Ten. Okay, that makes sense.
Because, yeah, there should be... Right. One more this week, then January 14th, it comes back with the Crisis episode. The next to last Crisis episode.
Right.
Which will be followed by Legends the next episode, the next day. Then episode 9 will be the backdoor pilot for the Green Arrow and Canary show, and then episode 10 on January 28th. And that'll be the end of the season, the show.
Man. That's a thing.
Yeah.
I also hear that, and I mentioned this into the void a few minutes ago, that Stargirl will be airing on the CW.
Right, the day after it airs on DC Universe. And there is rumor that she will at least have like a second long like bit in Crisis.
Oh. Man, they're just putting everything in Crisis.
Well, sure, I mean, and they can, you know, it's like they don't have to merge all the worlds type of thing.
Exactly.
But yeah, the Stargirl thing, I think it actually gives me some hope for the DC Universe streaming stuff, because it means that they've remonetized that show.
Right.
You know, sure, a lot of people will just watch on CW and not care, but they'll be like, some people will know and find out, like, oh, this is on the DC Universe streaming thing, and it airs today, let me go see what's there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like this show, and none of the other shows are anything like it, so that'll be funny.
They'll be like, wow, if you like Stargirl, you'll hate Titans.
Right, like, if you like our one show that's actually geared toward, like, a CW-type audience, you'll sure like our other shows where everyone curses and fucks.
Although, apparently, I read a pre-air review of the Harley Quinn cartoon on AV Club, And they gave it a glowing review.
I have heard good things. The one thing I've heard that is absolutely trash is that apparently like Poison Ivy will be on the show at least to start dating Kite Man. Why are we doing this bullshit? Yeah, why are we doing this bullshit? I couldn't tell you. But no, it is interesting to me. Like, you know, again, like if Stargirl is going to be also on the CW the day after, Doom Patrol, of course, will be on HBO Max as well as the DC Universe thing.
Right.
It's like Titans, Young Justice, and that other thing, Harley Quinn, will be the only things on just DC Universe.
Mm-hmm.
But they've also given Titans a third season. So they're getting money from somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that they're just bleeding money at the moment. I don't know how revenue models work anymore in this weird day and age.
Yeah, so much of streaming is loss leader for merchandise sales or eventual disc sales or just membership, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter what you're watching as long as you're watching.
Yeah.
As long as you're paying for the service. It doesn't matter how much of whatever you're watching. You know, their internal metrics will just decide whether something lives or dies.
Right.
But it's not quite monetary anymore in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the HBO thing, right? Like, if like 6 million people subscribe to HBO and HBO's making money, they can make more shows. Obviously, they're going to make the shows that people watch, but it's not quite as important that they do.
Right.
They can let things spin out a while.
Yeah,
which is why we had like 27 seasons of that firefighting show,
or Game of Thrones at all. You've probably read about a little more about the sort of
the Dennis Leary thing,
bungling their way through like the pilot and first season,
right?
So, but I mean, HBO has the deep pockets, and they're willing to give them time, because I think it was just like, well, shit, we're in it for this much, we can, let's keep going, and they lucked out.
Well, and that's the thing, it's like HBO Go costs like close to what HBO Max is going to cost, and I'm wondering if they're just going to roll everyone in and then claim look at their huge subscriber base from launch. Like that's their move.
I hope so.
It seems like a
smart move to me. Right. I mean, I'm not an HBO executive, so I don't know all the ins and outs, but I mean if I were sitting around a table, I certainly would pipe up with that idea.
Yeah, I mean, it makes them look bigger. So, yeah. But anyway, there was also a Good Place episode.
A good episode of Good Place, I have to say.
Yeah, this was one of the best episodes they've ever done, which I know we keep kind of saying that sometimes, don't we?
I know.
Every couple weeks, they are
on a tear with the back half of season 4.
Yeah,
and it's funny because you can sort of see, I'm beginning to see the like their game plan, like the way they sort of set things up to happen in the first half of season 4, and now it's all just paying off like moment by moment, which is pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and just the whole the cheaty of it all. Down to like a payoff that I didn't think we would ever actually get, because we didn't need it. It was always just a funny line, but I love that it's rooted in his life. It was like last season, I think, when he tells Eleanor like his brain always sounds like a fork stuck in a garbage disposal.
Oh, that's right.
And you're just like, okay, like that's a funny, you know, visual. And then we see it actually happen.
Yes.
And like you get the moment, and that like it's not just. And again, I think that moment now plays differently, because it's not just a funny moment and just a sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's tied to what happened.
Yes.
Yeah, I also do like just how it adds scenes to the back half of scenes we've already seen.
Yeah, I mean, often that's usually a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
But boy, was it. Boy, did it work this time around. And of course, when you have, like, you know, literally hundreds of years of lives to pull from, you've got a lot of room to play around there.
Yes.
And so I thought that was, I mean, they've given themselves lots of, like, potential material, but I just really enjoyed the way they sort of wove all these bits and pieces, scenes we haven't, scenes of like we've partly seen, scenes we've never seen, and just turned it into like the story of Chidi. Just
yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I also do love that yet again, Michael Shore shows come down to relationships between people.
Oh yeah.
Like romantic especially, but you know, it's like Parks and Rec took a few minutes to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But then it very much became like the romantic, like the emotional growth of all the characters into romantic relationships.
Right. Yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine has done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Good Place has always had that underpinning of it, even though they kind of yeah. joked about it in the first season, that it has become the center of the show.
Yeah, and it's funny because this is the Eleanor Chidi relationship has always been like, for me, that's always been the thing that I've sort of been slowest to accept.
Okay.
It works in many ways, but I never quite bought the chemistry between the two until this episode, actually.
Well, I think I could put a pin on why.
Do tell.
Because it made me realize something. This is the first time we've seen their relationship from his point of view.
That's exactly it.
We've only ever seen it from hers, and that doesn't invalidate it, but it really does. It gives you that weird view of the way she views romance and kind of this fleeting thing, so it doesn't quite ground.
Yes.
Like, it's still very sweet, and it's still important, and it's still lovely, but it was missing a bit of weight.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the scene in which they're talking after a night of studying philosophy together, and she kisses him, and then they have a conversation. I'm like, okay, now I just like, okay, I get it now. I buy it. It just,
well, I just
it all seemed to work.
I just love that, like, everyone else we see, including his parents and all that, you know, always react to that story of him as a kid that we're given mm-hmm. and we're shown, and it's shown to us as cute, even if, like, it makes kind of just Good Place sense.
Yeah.
And everyone is just like, oh, wasn't that adorable type of thing? And she sees it for the, like, horror show that it was. That, like, you should yeah. never accept or expect a child to go through that.
Right.
And what does that do to them?
Yeah.
Everyone else just dismisses it offhand. She cuts it to the quick. And that's where their relationship lives.
Yeah, that's a lot to put on an 8-year-old kid, she says.
Yeah.
And Michael further contextualizes it by saying, yeah, it wasn't... Like, because, I mean, this is, like, in a way, this is kind of, like, Chidi's sort of founding narrative, right? This is, like,
right.
this is what informs everything else. All his ideas in life are from that moment when he believes that he can find an answer to, like, the messiness of everything, including love. And then Michael's sort of, like, yeah, they just went to counseling, and it wasn't... You didn't find the answer wasn't the arguments you made. It was that you did it in the first place, that you showed yourself to be that, you know, that willing to, like, you know, to like sort of that you were even willing to sort of like do that for your parents, and that's what reminded them just to stay together. And it's like, yeah, that's it, right? It's not
right.
It's
and
not
when
the
you take both views, that like A, this is fucked up to do to a kid, and B. That, like, but it also did help, just not in the way you thought.
Yes.
You can see where that's the moment he recontextualizes his entire life.
Right, and then he writes the note.
And then he writes the note. Right, and that's it. Like, it's a simple, it's not even a puzzle, right? It's just, it's very simple math,
mm-hmm.
but it's very simple, very human math. That, again, takes a lifetime or 300 years and 800 lifetimes to actually do.
Yes. Is yes, quite something. I thought the use of the note was just kind of genius, because it all starts with like the note, like Eleanor, you know, writes the note to Janet to give to
uh-huh.
herself. You know, the fine cheating.
Well,
note.
There's one other bit though. There's one other like sneak little bit in the episode that I thought was perfect, because
mm-hmm.
you see him read the note, and then you see Eleanor smile.
Yes.
And they gave you the answer to that, like, earlier in the episode? When they were playing charades? Or Pictionary, whatever it was?
Right.
When she read the answers off my glasses? Like, she, you know, pretty sure she read the answers off the reflection of my glasses. And she's like, I wasn't cheating or anything.
That's right.
And so you realize, like, she just read the note.
Nice.
And it's, they don't, you know, they really undersell the moment because they need to.
Okay, because I'm glad.
But it's also
that
that's why he needs the note, because he knows she'll do it. So this way, it's like he gets to read the note, and it becomes a silent bit of communication between them. Because he knows how her brain works.
Right.
And so she could see it and get it without him having to say anything and disrupt everything else going on. It is a beautiful little capper.
Oh, that's
to everything you've seen.
Okay, this makes sense, because I knew by the smile that she understood what was on the note,
right.
But I didn't. The actual mechanics of it did not.
Yeah, no, it was because the
twig.
Like.
Nice.
Oh, she read the stuff off my glasses. I'm like, that's. And I don't know why, but when I first saw the scene, I was like, that's weirdly specific.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, anyone else, any other scene would have just been like, I'm pretty sure she was cheating. And you just leave it, and then she comes in, she's like, I wasn't cheating, and you just leave it.
Yeah.
But the very specific, this is how she did it. And then, you know, Janet going like, but if you remember the note, then you remember what it says.
Mm-hmm.
And he still wants it, and opens it facing her, and looking down at it, it's like, oh no, this is a gimme.
Mm-hmm.
This is him showing her the note in a way that he also understands that she'll get exactly what he just did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just that little bit of recursal that just really kind of cements the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because then also, in a certain sense, their entire relationship is based on her cheating and him helping her.
Yes, that's true.
And here's the latest example. See, it just, it works on every level. It's such a brilliant bit of subtle writing. That, like, I worry is almost too subtle, and I also don't want them to button it next episode and be like, oh, I read it off your glasses. You know, like, I just leave it be. But, damn it, people are going to miss the beautiful moment there.
Oh, yeah. No, I missed it completely. So.
And, of course, this was their last break, their last episode before their break. So they're not back till January.
God damn it.
And then they're back with their final episodes.
I hate them now. Well, that's oh well.
But again, we get a beautiful bit to hang on, so.
Yeah.
And actually, speaking of, because I don't think we really talked about it last week, I think we talked about it after we finished recording really quick. Even though I never watch previews for stuff, like, I haven't seen any of the Crisis previews, really.
Mm-hmm.
Except for a few still images. One of which, by the way, cements a theory I had and that other people weren't sure about. And I wasn't sure about it. I just had a guess. Was the whether or not the, you know, well, we have Kevin Conroy as old Bruce Wayne. Like, does that mean we're getting the Batman Beyond future? I'm like, no, he's Kingdom Come Batman. That makes sense. And there's a still image, and you can see on his shoulders he has that same kind of, like, brace armor.
Oh.
The Batman wore in Kingdom Come. So he's very much the Kingdom Come Batman. So... there you go. But anyway, but I did give in and watch the Magicians trailer.
Right, yes.
And it's still an unspecified January date, but god damn it, I need that show back. Like, they're actually doing the thing this season. Have you seen it yet?
I have.
Okay. Because, last time we talked, you hadn't. And it was just this entire season is just dealing with grief. And, you know, how do you move forward? And it's what the season needs to be, and I do worry that it's their last season. That would be how you end the show, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if that were the case. I'll put it that way.
I'm just a little upset that if it is their last season, there are a whole bunch of people who are like, see, we told you that would kill the show.
No, I think it needs to be... I mean, I think they need to deal with Quentin's death and all that. Yeah. No, I watched it really quickly, so I honestly don't remember a thing from it now. Except that
Elliot
was
funny. There's not much to it except for like the endgame joke, you know.
Right. Right. Yes.
When did you get the time to watch that? Just it's a good point.
Yes.
Sarah Gamble actually said somewhere recently that like Quentin is in the show this season still. Just the actor isn't around,
what?
And the character's dead. But he's still very much in the show.
Mm-hmm.
In the way of like, you know, he is the driving force for a lot of things still.
Exactly.
Which again is what it needs to do. So Yeah, I kind of am looking very much forward to that.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I saw another trailer as well. Oh, I saw that the Doctor Who trailer.
Oh, I actually, yes. Yes,
and
I...
Boy, did you see it?
I did, weirdly enough. I didn't mean to.
Okay.
It was one of those things of I because I didn't really want to watch it because, you know, again, like season previews and all that.
Gotcha.
And I just clicked on it. Like, it wasn't like a conscious thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those like, oh, Doctor Who's coming back and like this date. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I clicked on the thing thinking it would just have a date.
Yes.
But it was a video. Like, I thought it would just be like a teaser, like just the Doctor Who thing and a date.
Oh,
not
yes.
Like an actual preview.
Right.
So I was like, oh, I might as well watch it. And yeah, this feels like they figured out the rest of their shit from last season.
Exactly.
But apparently we're not getting a Christmas episode, we're getting a two-part New Year's.
That's all right. I can live with it.
It's a week difference.
If they're going to make me wait for until mid-January or whenever for The Good Place, I'll, you know...
Yeah, well, mid-January for The Good Place, probably mid-January for Magicians, mid-January for The End of Crisis...
Man, what I'm look. I don't care about Christmas time. Just give me my entertainment. You shysters.
This is actually kind of funny. If you read comics, there is a shipping week this year where there are a bunch of DC books, especially that keep being late, and they've all been pushed because they all want to come out before the end of the year. So they've all been pushed to December 18th.
Oh.
And it's gonna be like the biggest shipping week of the year for DC by accident.
God.
And there's just so much coming out, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
Like, another, like, three books got shoved into it this week.
Oh, shit.
And it's just, it is becoming hysterical, and I'm feeling like, you know, mid-January is the same thing for TV now.
Just everything's gonna be, like, just dropped at once.
Yeah.
Alright.
And again, like, but early December, like, next week, I guess? God, is that next week already? Jesus.
I know.
No, it's not, but... week after next. December 6th, we get a new season of Ms. Maisel.
Oh, very nice.
And I think also December 13th, there you go, we get all of season 4 of Expanse dropped at once. God help us.
Oh my God, yes. I am very much there for that.
Yeah, I just, as much as I love that they're dropping it all at once, I'm just like, it's a bad week for me personally. Just because I have a friend's wedding on the 21st, and I have, like, an out-of-town friend who's coming by and staying with me for part of the week, and just, you know, like, bachelor party party-type stuff on the 14th, I'm just like, I don't know when that week, like, I won't be able to watch it till, like, the 23rd, and I'm like, no! I don't want to have to wait that whole week!
Mm-hmm.
While everyone else gets to watch it? I want to watch it! Like, I want to just do nothing else that weekend except watch that. This is the problem with binge shit for me. It's like, it hits on a bad week and you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I've seen that with, like, streaming shows that, like, do the whole, here's the season, when there's a con that weekend. I'm just like, well, guess I'll watch it after everyone else has told me what happened. You know?
Yes. Yep, I know that feeling.
Although I do think the funny one of those, just... completely off topic or anything else, was One Emerald City. You know, MLC starts on, like, Wednesday now.
Hmm.
Well, Thursday. But we go up Wednesday afternoon. And that Thursday into Friday, Logan opened.
Oh.
And, of course, we're all in Seattle, and we're like, we're not going to take time. Because, like, we're going to come. We're social people we only see once a year. Like, we're not going to go see a movie. But we all had to brace for the, okay, all weekend there are people who will have gone and seen the movie with their friends, who are walking around the show, just talking to their friends.
Right.
And stopping by to buy things, but they're talking about the movie. Like, you can't tell them to shut up. Like, it's not... That's perfectly legitimate. You know what I mean? But that you have to kind of do the con going, well, this movie is about to be spoiled for me all weekend long.
Fair enough.
Just because of other human beings just talking about it. And weirdly, it wasn't. Like, no one was talking about it, which is weird, given how good that film was, and that everyone was eventually talking about it.
So you just lucked out, basically.
Yeah. I don't think that'll happen with Expanse.
No, I think people are going to be... And from what... I mean, the thing is, it's... the way it's playing out in the trailer, I mean it's very similar to the novel. I think it was
Sure,
Chip
and
O'Byrne. So
it's kind
I'm
of an
pretty sure.
unspoilerable show.
Yeah.
Like I'd read the first book before I saw the first season, and I knew kind of what was coming, but it still didn't spoil anything
No.
because it's a show that is really all about the character interactions. And even if people are quoting funny lines, just like someone saying, if someone had said like, "Oh, this episode of Expanse when Amos says like I'm that guy," it's like, okay, that doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's an Amos line, that's cool. You see it in context, and it's a different concept.
Yes, very
So I'm
much.
not actually worried about that.
Fair enough. I think, but yeah, no, I'm basically gonna be taking the day off to just. I'm clearing my schedule to watch a shitload of
Damn
Expanse.
you.
And December 20th, when The Witcher drops, I will
You
probably not be clearing my schedule.
mean December 20th when Cats opens?
Ooh, well, damn.
Please,
What do I
sir,
do now?
get your important cultural markings
Get
correct.
your priorities together, yeah,
Yeah,
Philistine.
what's Star Wars?
Oh, I'm gonna be in line for Rise of Skywalker. Let's
Yeah, I
I
already have our tickets for late Thursday night.
Oh, nice.
Like 10 p.m. showing or something stupid.
Yeah, I might do the same here. Yeah.
Well, and it really is because like, okay, my friends who are huge Star Wars fans are getting married on the 21st.
Wow.
And Friday the 20th is kind of like the rehearsal for the wedding. So and again, big Star Wars fan, they want to go see it. And I was like, I too would like to see it. And like, well, we'll get tickets, right? Like for the 20th, except with work and all this, it turns out to be a really late showing. And I'm like, that's cool. You guys don't have to work on that Friday. I do. And it's like my last work day before like a winter break. And so I'm just like, oh, good. I'll just be exhausted on Friday, but I'll get to fuck me, that's the rehearsal. Well, but at least on Saturday I get to, oh, fuck me, that's the actual wedding. Oh, I'm gonna be fucked up by the 23rd.
I'll be on vacation all through that week, so I got time. My
Well,
schedule.
and yeah. So anyway, we are hitting the hour mark, so we should probably stop this now.
Absolutely. Before we go
And
into depth about my vacation plans, which are not interesting
mine, and
anymore.
just yeah, this is starting to be like after recording stuff. So let's
Yeah.
do that.
All right.
Woo!
Well, let's get some music. Woo.